Welcome into another edition of the Flagrant 2 podcast with Bill Ryder and Reed Forgrave. Remember to subscribe on iTunes, listen on SoundCloud, rate and review favorably and with deep affection. You can also follow us on Twitter. Reed is on there at Reed Forgrave. I'm on there at Sports Writer. Sports is my last name, R-E-I-T-E-R. Either Reed or I, one of us will not be finishing the podcast because we assume an NBA official will just randomly jump in here, headbutt one of us, and kick us off the stream. Reed, what in the world? All right, so not only did Sean Livingston headbutt an official, but it turns out maybe the official headbutted him. This comes on the heels of LeBron James being kicked out of a game the first time in his career in the last week. Anthony Davis didn't just get ejected. He went batshit crazy. Kevin Durant. It was an amazing, like running one way and then turning on a dime and coming back, and a guy basically caught him. It was like a Matrix, I'm going to stop you from fighting someone move. And KD, Kevin Durant, also booted. Why refs all mad?
What, our national anger as a country right now is coming out on the basketball court.
Did you just blame this on Trump?
Explanation?
No, not Trump.
Our national anger. It's Twitter, dude. It's the Twitter effect. We're also angry.
I got it.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Kind of weird, right? Like, especially that Livingston ejection. Like, that felt like the ref was almost going after him as much as Livingston was going after the ref. That felt excessive. The LeBron ejection felt like the quickest trigger in history. LeBron.
Well, I'll say this about the LeBron.
Something about his mom.
About the LeBron thing. Like, I mean, you don't know, right? You don't know right. What was said, and you can only assess it from a distance. I mean, LeBron, like Jordan, pushes the envelope in what he says, right? Because he's allowed that latitude. But we all have bad days. Like, when I saw the LeBron thing, I thought, all right, LeBron, like, went, you know, 25% past the line that would get 99% of the guys kicked out of a game. He went right where he always goes when he's angry. And this time this official just like made a mistake and forgot who he was dealing with. But I'm like the Livingston thing. And by the way, like there should be. All right. So I've watched it. You've watched it. I've slowed it down. You know, you can only watch it on repeat so many times. It sure looks to me like the official doesn't just lean in. You can't tell. But to me, it looked like the official didn't just lean into Livingston. It looked like he headbutted him. I mean, ever so slightly. And then ejected him for the contact he created.
Right. I agree. I watched it 5 or 6 times last night. Yeah, it feels like, look, the refs have the worst job on earth, right? Like, other than maybe, like, a police officer in a terrible part of town, right? It's such a thankless job, and the only time that that people are talking about you is when you screw up. But you got to just walk away from something like that. Look, it seems like there's been a million ejections this year. As our, you know, lovely producer Joey has pointed out, there's only been 14. Last year, the whole season, there were 68 ejections. So it's like,
yeah, but
slightly less than one
of
pace,
those were DeMarcus Cousins.
Yes, exactly. This is a good point. But yeah, it's because these are big names that we're talking about it. But yeah, if you're a ref, you just got to back off, man. You're right. LeBron must have said something that was absolutely egregious because that felt like such a quick trigger.
That's not really what I'm saying. Like, I don't think – I mean, my guess is that LeBron said what he always says. Like, you know, you motherfucker. I don't know what LeBron says. I'm just making that up. Maybe that's unfair to LeBron. But I'm sure that LeBron has a sense of what he can say that's the line. And the line for LeBron's a lot further than most people. And that official just got tired of it. And I'm not – I don't mean to disparage LeBron. Like, maybe LeBron said, hey, why don't you return that book to the book club, you overlate library chump? And that kind of kick. I don't know what he said.
Never call a man a chump, dude.
Never question a man's library skills. I mean, it's interesting too because, and maybe I'm correlating things where I should not, but we have seen a rise of sort of alienation between players and their leagues and their officials across multiple sports, right? I know the NFL thing's a lot more egregious, and it's based more in the anthem protests, and it's based in other things. But it does remind me of what sort of you and I, Reed, know about being reporters for our newspaper days. And that is the further you move up the reporting chart, right? You go from covering high schools or local cops or whatever, where you're dealing with people who have the same lives as you, the same problems,
the same mortgages. They drive the same kind of cars, right? They eat at the same kind of restaurants. You can relate to those folks and they can relate to you. You feel like you're on the same side. And the more you work your way up, whether it's covering a president like I've done, covering a governor like you've done, covering LeBron James like I've done, covering Cal like you do, there's a disconnect, right? And like, and I've heard old time baseball writers talk about covering baseball was a lot different when you would have a beer with Mickey Mantle, when you would hang out. Well, Maris didn't hang out with the writers, which is why he got all that flack. But like when there was a connection, and you know, you've got, like you said, it's a tense time in America. There's a lot of stuff going on, and you've got officials and players who are paid substantially different amounts of money. Substantially different. I mean, look at the money that's exploded in the NBA in just the last few years. People are human beings. People are resentful. You know, it would not shock me if players are conducting themselves in the way that they think is like appropriate, and officials are getting more and more tired of having to deal with guys. When you don't have a lot, you envy those who do. Like, that's just a reality. I don't know.
That's a fascinating point. I did not. I was thinking just Twitter makes us angry, bro.
I mean, like, even at newspapers, right? Like, and I'll go to sort of what you and I know. And this is sort of in my past and your past. But I'll talk about the Kansas City Star, right? When I worked at the Kansas City Star, and I was really close with one of these guys and not close with the other one. Was really close with Jason Whitlock. Was not close with Joe Biznanski. But when I worked at a newspaper at the Kansas City Star, and they were both there, those guys were like the big deals, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they made a lot more money. I mean, I don't know what they made, but the speculation was always they made, I'll talk real money, they made $200,000, $250,000,
$300,000, $400,000
a year. A lot of money in newspapers. You're talking newspaper guys are making 30, 50, if you were really well paid, 60 or 70, right? Like that was the range, 40s, 50s. Joe and Jason were great at what they did. They distinguished the newspaper. They were social to varying degrees, right? Depending on who you were. But there was always this resentment. I don't care what any of those Kansas City Star guys say now. Like, there was always this resentment. Now, there was these cliques that would form. But, like, it was hard to find a person in that building that didn't resent Joe or Jason, one of the two. And I'm telling you, it was always about the money. Like, deep down, it was about the money. And the more those guys got successful, the more Whitlock got on television, the more Poznanski won award after award, and people talk about it as the greatest newspaper columnist of all time. You know, Jason gets on Oprah. Poznanski does this, you know, hit or that hit for whatever thing looking back at sports. People got jealous. People, and they started cutting salaries, and they started doing furloughs, and like I and a lot of us got 5% pay cuts, right? Like it brings out resentment. That's not Jason's fault. That's not Poznanski's fault, right? Maybe not even the fault of the $35,000 a year copy editor who can't stand him all of a sudden. So I'm just saying, like, I know it's a basketball podcast, but sometimes I think economics play a role in those things. And whenever there's a disparity, people get really, really angry. And I just think it's interesting that the biggest stars are among those who have been kicked out for doing things. I can't imagine Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, LeBron James woke up one day and as a group were like, let's be extra special a-holes. I'm sure they're doing that, conducting themselves the way they've always conducted themselves, only it's seen in a different light now. That's my theory.
In the light of extending analogies a little bit, the most mad that I will get at my lovely and near perfect wife is
which one? The one in Minnesota? The one in
the Minnesota? One in Texas. Yeah. No. The other four are not part of this conversation.
Got it. Sorry.
Nor should they be on.
We'll just delete that.
Just be sure to edit that. Yeah. Other four wives. Come on. Yep. But it's like tone of voice stuff, right? It's like you could say the exact same thing, and if there's a different tone of voice to it, it can be completely different. And I'm talking specifically about the LeBron and the Livingston one. Whatever it was that they said, it wasn't just a player whining about a foul. It was that they were both kind of like looking down their nose at the official, berating them, going a little bit too far.
But I got to jump in though. Like I hear what you're saying, but I don't think you and I just disagree. What leads you to believe it was any? I've been around LeBron a bunch when he's talking shit to officials. What makes you think it was any different than anything that's happened before? Like you're just guessing.
Because he got. I am just guessing. Of course, we are. We don't know what was said there. We don't know what the ref said back to them. Of course not. But what we do know is that I think LeBron looked as crazy-eyed as I've ever seen him on a basketball court. Totally in that disagree. Situation.
Totally disagree.
You look at that video. He was like,
"Totally, dude." LeBron's a classic whiner. He learned,
whining versus mocking, I think, is
it's all
different.
About your mentor. I've seen Dwayne Wade be able to go up for a layup, make contact barely with the defender, and then throw himself into the fifth row and be like, oh, the pain. Right, that part's not true. But like, there's a level of like sort of flopperation and dramatization. I mean, look, man, maybe you're right. Maybe LeBron went up to that guy.
No, you know LeBron as well as anyone.
I don't believe that. Like, I think I've heard, I've sat on the floor and like listened to some, Joey, you know, it's like you worked in the NBA. There's a lot of stuff. If you had to get up your bleep button you just used for an NBA game, you'd use it more than you do on this podcast. And Reed can't fucking stop swearing.
That's impossible.
Joey, you have a list of all the guys kicked out this year. I'm interested to hear it. Just a quick analysis of like star level.
Yeah,
star
it's interesting. So there's been 14 guys, like Reed said, and 11 of the ejections. KD has two of them. He has the most so far this year with two. Everybody else has one. But it's KD has two, Boogie, Draymond Green, Carmelo Anthony, which was the most ridiculous one of the year.
It was
ridiculous. Steph Curry. Kyle Lowry, Nikola Jokic, LeBron, Brad Beal, Anthony Davis, and then PJ Tucker, Markieff Morris, Sean Livingston. So
look at it this way. Of the top 20 or 25 players in the league, how many of them have been kicked out? Five of them?
Also,
six of them?
Also, five of the 14 have been Warriors.
That's interesting.
Which is interesting. I'm just noticing that now.
I almost made a pun, but I held back.
So that'd be a first.
It would have been, because it would have been fighting words. back in the end on a different one. All right. So by the way, Paul George complained about the officiating after last night's win. No note on whether he complained about going 2 of 39, actually 2 of 17. It was awful. Spolsa and Dragic and Waiters probably deserve a better whistle. And I get that people are going to complain about refs, but that there's been this mass of complaints, of concerns, of ejections, I think speaks to something. And you know, I don't want you guys to get twisted. I'm a Paul George fan. I'm a fan of his game and his talent. But I think it's interesting he is complaining about the officiating last night in a win, by the way. They won that game. It probably speaks to the fact that something's going on. By the way, speaking of Paul George, Thunder did beat the Spurs 90-87. Same old story. And again, like I had Matt Moore on the radio show the other day. Love Matt. He's the best. And he really – it's interesting, right? Like, smart people can disagree. He thinks their ceiling is absolute. The Thunder ceiling is absolute. And you could see that in the game last night. They held the Spurs to 87 points. Their defense was remarkable. Their effort was incredible. They look like the best defensive team in the league, which they have been, other than, like, the last six or seven games. I think they're third, or entering that game, they were third in defensive efficiency rating. Wouldn't shock me if they finish first or second. Now, I mean, they probably will. However, and I said this to Matt, I think the floor is much lower than Matt and other people give it credit for. And I think sometimes in the NBA and in covering the NBA, we look at paper and we look at what happens on the floor and we study tape and we are trained to interpret it toward its best case scenario. And we do a much, much less, I think, thorough job of looking to its worst case scenario, because that's human nature. Let's be optimists. Let's reach for hyperbole on the positive side. Let's talk about all-time greatness. Like, we always talk about, can LeBron pass Jordan? We never talk about LeBron's, like, floor. Could he go as low as six all-time? But I think as it relates to teams, that makes sense. Like, the goal is to win a championship. It can be measured at the end of the year. And on the floor side, you can see that too, guys. The offense was terrible. Paul George had another – he's just been bizarre all over the place, like, incredibly inefficient. Now, his 2 of 17 was a big part of it, but he and Melo combined to shoot 6 of 27. I think Melo was like 3 of 10 or something. They were 2 of 10 from the three-point line. Russ did have a triple-double. I don't know, Reed. Like, we talk about the Thunder a lot, and I'm just going to continue to say, I'm not going to argue with you or Matt Moore or anyone on the upside of that team, but I am surprised that there aren't enough people seeing the downside, even after a win like that, because guess what? If that's your offense, the Warriors are going to blow you out of the built out of the arena, because they can do both.
Yeah, this I mean, we kind of are seeing the floor, right? Like, how much worse could this team be than they have been the first 20-22 games?
They could have lost to the Spurs and the Warriors.
They could have lost to the Spurs and the Warriors. This is true. Look, I don't get this team. Like, how can Paul George go, what, 2 of 17? And then game before that, 36 points. And then like a game or two before that, he was like 1 of 11 with 6 turnovers. This team, to me, just
he's not comfortable.
Yeah.
Here's what I'll say. Can I do false equivalency? Can I do like a false equivalency? And that Clippers team that I was around in L.A., that a GM prophesized would collapse because they didn't like each other, right? When they did, when they were up 3-1 against Houston in the Western Conference semis, this GM told me, then a GM told me, maybe now a GM, see, trying to disguise the sources, you never know. Then was the GM, not saying what they do today, told me that, and that was when, like, the Clippers were a force, people believed in the Clippers, you know, the narrative hadn't sort of played itself out. I was on an island kind of speaking about, again, their floor. And he's like, when teams don't like each other, when they don't get along, when they don't want to be there, when that kind of tension exists, talent covers it up in the regular season. But in a 7-game series, when you've got tape and you've got matchups and you've got adjustments, you've got everybody trying on both sides of the equation, you got to beat a team 4 times, teams that don't get along and don't like each other kind of come out. And you see it, and they come apart at the seams. Maybe false equivalency. Maybe taking my experience from that and applying it to a Thunder team I'm not around and don't have sources around on the same level. However, Paul George's inconsistencies, the fact that we know he wants to be a Laker, Melo's history of pouting, the fact that everyone that has left Russell Westbrook this year has been exceptionally better for being on different teams away from the MVP. I don't know, Reed. It's like I could see this team coming apart at the seams. And to your point, I think the Paul George inconsistencies for me, like playing to, these guys aren't comfortable together.
Who gets the lion's share of the blame here? Or is it just a bunch of guys that at least right now don't seem to fit? Because, I mean, I wonder how much of this goes to Billy Donovan. Like,
I would say Sam Presti.
Yeah.
Did we discuss this on the pod or was it the radio show the other day where I think Presti did exactly what he had to do in this situation. He made the right call bringing these two guys in. So I give him credit. But he also should be fired for it because Sam Presti, who let Harden go, is the reason it got to this in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, give Sam Presti credit for a brilliant move and trying to make up for his strategic blunder of epic proportions 3-4 years. When did Harden leave? 4 years ago?
Three?
Whatever it was.
Yeah.
So I think Presti gets the blame, Reed. I think Billy Donovan might go under the bus. But the thing is, if Presti fires Donovan, that's remember, Presti forced out, you know, got rid of a coach who'd made it to an NBA Finals.
A very well-liked by players coach.
Good at developing young talent kind of coach.
Yeah.
That team's not doing particularly well, but he now coaches a team that I think many consider to be a real contender in the Eastern Conference. So it's in the Wizards. It's a great question. I think off the court, it should be Presti. Because look, is Billy Donovan not up to the task? No, he's not. Few people will be up to the task of those three guys. Why the desperation move to bring in those three guys who would have trouble working out for the right coach, let alone a former college coach? Because Sam Presti made a colossal error. Maybe it was the radio show. Those guys, in their arrogance, the Oklahoma City Thunder organization lost sort of their compass. I like the PR guys. I like Matt Tumbleson. Matt, hope you're listening to the podcast. But those guys got too big for their britches. I mean, Matt was a guy that used to write everybody back and like ask for coverage. And I'd be shocked if I could get an email back from Matt Tumbleson. The only time I hear from Matt Tumbleson is when I criticize Sam Presti and I get a like, hey, you should come to Oklahoma City and hang out. Like, and Matt, if you're listening, sorry, brother, like full disclosure is the way that it is. Like, call me back and we can talk about it. The point is, like, those guys got so big, they changed their approach, they changed what they did. Nobody writes or talks about this in the media because I you know, most guys that cover it for our shop and other shops have to sort of work with those guys to break news. I don't. I live in a studio that affords me distance, that makes me not as connected as I'd like to be, but also the ability to be utterly and totally honest. And the honest thing is, Reed, like Sam Presti, like his organization, went from being the little engine that could to the most arrogant organization on the planet in the NBA, and I think it caught up to him.
Some big words there, dude. That's some big words.
I do. We're smarter than the game.
Yeah, we'll that's a fascinating take. What's that?
We're smarter than the game. We'll trade Harden. It doesn't matter if it's in conference. I'm not going to deal with Cleveland. Russ is the better player. We'll make it work. I don't need Scotty. We'll go with Billy. It annoys the shit out of me. It happens in the NFL too, right? Like, I mean, you're sitting in a top five city in America, Reed, Minnesota. They have the top seed in the NFC, and Mike Zimmer keeps wanting to bench their quarterback for a guy that hasn't played in 2 years and Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, this happens across all sports. The Yankees just fired a guy that's won a World Series in Joe Girardi and brought in an analyst from ESPN who's never managed before. And Aaron Boone, like, everybody thinks they're smarter than the game, and very few people actually are.
Yeah, it's a very dangerous way of thinking. Very, like, every once in a while there is someone who is smarter than the game. And I think that is very, very rare. And yeah, boy, that James Harden trade just looks like one of the top 10 worst in NBA history at this point. Traded the wrong guy, didn't get anything for him.
Built that team, such a bad trade. Built that team into the other, I mean, that trade also helped make Houston into a force, right? Like,
yeah.
The Rockets now.
They hit three straight lottery tickets, Harden, Westbrook, Durant. And what do they have to show for it? Not much.
Well, that's the thing is, like, the other thing, yeah, because it was on the podcast, wasn't it? And we talked about, like, you're going to go into the luxury tax for Canada. But anyway, I don't mean to pick on Presti, and I know it sounds like I'm being mean to Matt Tumbleson. I just think that those things reflect a culture. Like, there's a great story on Frank Isola 5 or 6 years ago that somebody wrote about how the PR staff bullied Frank Isola, treated him like crap, followed him everywhere. Why is it relevant? Because that is an insight into the incompetence of that organization, the Knicks, and it's played out now for the last 5, 6, 7 years. Whenever that story ran, these things matter. Like, Matt Tumbleson's a nice guy, and he's got to do what he's got to do. But I think, like, we sometimes in the business see behind the scenes and don't share it in a way that we should, frankly. Let me add this real quick. The best run PR staff in the game, long before they were good, the Golden State Warriors. And with all respect to that organization, the guys that do a great job there, Raymond, Brent, they're great. That is a product of culture in the organization, not a product of, like, the right PR guys, right? I mean, they're great PR guys, but it's a product of culture.
Yep, 100%. You see the big timers. It absolutely shines through. A bit of an aside on OKC, but are they a better team without Melo? If they hadn't made that trade, would they have been a better team? I don't think they would. I mean,
I think it's possible.
Cantor's better. I don't know if he would have been, like, the answer if he were staying there, but I don't think they'd be any – certainly wouldn't be any worse if they didn't have Melo.
I mean, it's a trick question for me, Reed, because I'm not a Melo guy.
Yeah, I never have.
Yeah, I mean, my answer is, yeah, I think he's inefficient. I think he doesn't share the ball. I mean, of all the stars in that team, I think he's the least interested in playing consistent defense. I mean, not the thing about Paul George, man. Like, Paul George can play D. Like, say what you want about the Thunder. When you get into best of seven series, Paul George is going to be the best or one of the two best defenders on the floor.
100% every time. Yeah.
Even when the Warriors are on the floor. Like, he'll be the second best defender on the floor, assuming Draymond's in that rotation, right? Like, and that, I mean, I think the Thunder, Matt Moore made the case. He thinks nobody can stand a better chance to beat the Warriors than the Thunder. Well, I would probably go Rockets. You can make an argument for the Thunder. I also think nobody stands a better chance to get swept by a team they shouldn't in the playoffs in Western Conference than the Thunder.
So they're sitting at 9 right now. So they'd be out of the playoffs if it starts at 8. Odds that they are out of the playoffs come April, like 10%.
I was gonna go 15.
Yeah,
I mean, Anthony Davis is injured all the time, right? It's like Pelicans are at 8, and they're just a game or two back of the Jazz. I mean, at a certain point, look, Rockets, Warriors, Spurs, Timberwolves, and Blazers. I buy for different reasons.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, you guys are believing in the Nuggets, right?
Yeah.
Oh, they lost Millsap, but still, I mean, they've won a couple in a row. They're 13-9. By the way, nothing about Denver, not to, like, go on a tangent, but Denver hasn't been good in a while, but people forget they have one of the most important home court advantages in the NBA. It doesn't apply as much because there aren't as many back-to-backs in 3 and 4s. That's a tough place to go on short rest because of the altitude. I can remember as a reporter going there, like, being out of breath just because, like, you're in and you're out and there's no acclimation time. So, like, that is – I don't know what it is in sort of the rest-centric schedule, but back in the day, Denver's schedule, if they were just like a 5 or 6 seed, right, which I would argue was easily good for 5 wins in a season of their 41 home games, easily. So, I mean, like, Denver could be for real. Real, man, in the sense of
that's
a competitor.
That's my dark horse team in the West, right?
Doing it. Reed Forgrave doing it. by the way, speaking of doing it, buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated and confusing, especially for me. I'm a moron, but especially when it comes to like using apps. But there's a better way to buy with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest and easiest way to get tickets to every type of event. Whether you're searching for the last-minute deal, planning a night out with your wife, or need to find the perfect country music venue for yourself if you're Reed Forgrave, SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. There's nothing quite like seeing your favorite team or musician in person, and SeatGeek will get you closer to the action for a great value. Reed and I have the SeatGeek app on our phones, and by far it's the easiest way we found to shop for tickets. We can be anywhere. There's a few steps. We instantly find seats. As I said, Reed uses a SeatGeek app all the time to buy tickets to country music and Arcade Fire. SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever. To get the most bang for your buck, SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. So for Reed, it's like it's even they adjust it. So for Reed, it'll be like, wow, this is a 5-tractor seat. Okay, that part's not true. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code Flagrant today. That's Flagrant, Flagrant for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Reed, what's the last concert you saw?
It was Arcade Fire. Do we count the I took my 5-year-old to a some sort of kid show a couple weeks ago? No. Yeah, that counts. It was it was Arcade Fire then.
It was not. You definitely went to some country music venue. All right, Joey, have you even spoken on the podcast yet?
I read that list. I read the list of guys who got rejected.
You killed
Joey,
producer Joey.
I did it. I did it.
You did it, Joey. All right. By the way, like somebody on Twitter said that we're like Lonzo apologists. Are we Lonzo apologists?
I think so. We're like the only people who say he shouldn't be. He deserves a spot in the NBA. I think Lonzo's still going to be good. Whatever.
You too. I think it is dark days indeed. It's also like, you know, the fifth week. I'm not good at math. Where are we at? Yeah, sixth week of his NBA career. I love everyone trying to make indictments early on. Sounds good. Joey, is it time for another edition of Quick Shots?
It is. It is indeed. Well, since we're talking about Lonzo, I'm gonna add this one in since it wasn't on the original list, because this is just an article that came out this morning. His father, LeVar, not staying out of the news for long. Staples Center's always had this policy that they apparently have not enforced, where they are not, the media is not supposed to be able to congregate and interview people around the family, friends, and agents section after games. But apparently there's been way too much of that this year, and Staples Center's employees are now calling it the LeVar Ball Rule because they seem to be enforcing it now and not allowing media around that section after games. Bill.
It's an amateur move by an organization in a tough spot. This would be like if you suddenly started getting ticketed for jaywalking because you were dating the police officer's niece. It's not cool, even if it's in the letter of the law. Lakers, Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, PR staff minus John Black, who was a legend they got rid of. You guys should be better than this. Instead, you're going down to LeVar's level. Stop it.
You knew this. You knew this when you drafted Lonzo. Maybe you thought LeVar would get quiet, but all evidence pointed to the opposite. You're not going to quiet LeVar. I was watching an NFL game on my iPad yesterday, and every other commercial was for Ball in the Family, the lovely Facebook show.
Really?
Yeah, it was all over the place.
It was like on broadcast TV commercial?
So I'm guessing it was just on the app because I was watching it on my iPad, so it was on the other company that does NFL broadcasts on Sundays app.
Can I just do a breaking news? Can I break in with breaking news? If this won't get released until later. Not even NBA news. Ben McAdoo, Ben McAdoo, fired 24 hours after Eli Manning didn't start. That guy. I'm sorry, Joey. Please continue. I meant Ben, by the way. McAdoo.
As an aside to this topic, have you watched the trailer for Ball in the Family season 2? I don't know if that show is. I watched a couple episodes because we had him on the podcast early on. The second season looks pretty. They were in China when LiAngelo got arrested. Like, there's stuff on the show about
they
that.
They tease it. I don't know if it was a trailer or a commercial that I was watching, but they tease the China stuff. They're like,
yeah, it's pretty interesting.
He's learning Chinese because he's going to China. And then they show him in China with his backpack. It's like, oh, shit, about to go bad.
Reed, why'd you swear, bro?
Sorry, dude. I just called you a dude somewhere between dude and dick. Sorry, Joey.
All right. Moving on.
What is this, Barstool?
The Derrick Rose saga continues. This morning, Adrian Wojnarowski tweeted that Derrick Rose reportedly plans to return to the Cavs practice facility and will meet with front office officials to begin the process of returning to the team. They're 11-1 without him. They've won 11 in a row. They're 11th in defense in the league since the streak started. They are 26 on the season. Bill.
I know it's quick shots. Two quick things. One, Derrick Rose can't retire. He has so much money from that Adidas deal on the line. What is it, $80 million? And two, yeah. The Cavs' prayers in this case were not answered, so you have to do the tough thing and the strong thing. And you have a GM who is untested and a head coach I don't believe in, Kobe Altman, Ty Lue, respectively. He's under contract. You welcome him back. You don't play him a single minute. Welcome to the practice squad.
Ugh. How the mighty have fallen.
I feel bad for him, too.
You're right, though. I mean, can you buy him out? I don't know if that's even possible, but there's clearly a much worse team with him on the floor. Isaiah coming back soon. He's such a disaster on defense, Derrick Rose is.
I don't think he can agree to a buyout, though, because I don't know the deals terms of his deal, but what if you get bought out and nobody signs you? Is your Adidas deal then? Do you have to be on a roster? If you're Derrick Rose, I think it's. No, he clearly hates what he's doing.
Ugh, I feel so bad for him. It's such a sad story. Such a sad story.
Yeah. Well, what is seemingly turning into a sad story? Anthony Davis injured again. This time he was taken off in a wheelchair in the Pelicans' loss on Friday night to the Jazz. They're saying it's a pelvis injury, but they're waiting on releasing the MRI results. He won't play tonight against the Warriors. And they're the eighth seed in the West, and it actually seemed like maybe they're starting to figure some things out this season, and now he's down again. Reed.
What a waste for the first 6 years of this guy's career. I mean, I get the injury stuff, but look, this is a guy who, when healthy, is certainly a top 10 player, maybe a top 5 player in the NBA. And they've been to one playoff appearance. I know that isn't exactly his injury that we're talking about here and his injury history, but the fact that they've surrounded him with such crap and such a lack of depth is an absolute travesty by the New Orleans Pelicans.
Yeah, I mean, the greatest skill LeBron James possesses is the one we never talk about, and that is his remarkable durability and the number of minutes he is able to play. Greatness is real, but it's defined by its execution, not by its hope or its promise or what could have been. You got to be healthy, and the greatness of Anthony Davis is becoming the certainty of what could have been when we look back at his career.
All right. Well, another guy who we alluded to it in the last episode, and hopefully it's not the case, but he seems to get hurt every now and then too, but it's Kristaps Porzingis. This one's a little more fun, though. Reed will love this one.
Yeah, you really took it to a happy place.
Adidas made him custom shoes with unicorns on the bottom. Reed, you love unicorns. What do you think?
See, I'm 5'3", he's 7'3". Should we meet him in the middle? Was that your girl's line to Kristaps, Joey?
That was it.
Yeah. Why are we telling that?
Wait. The story being.
I know the story. Okay. I know the story. Yeah. The listener doesn't know the story, right?
Listeners don't know the story. Joey is friends with a girl who asked Kristaps on a date using that line, which I think that should be his next pair of custom shoes. But I think it's awesome. I want me some unicorn shoes more than I even want a pair of Yeezys, dude.
That was your take? Okay.
I don't know what I'm going to take about unicorn shoes.
Porzingis listens to the podcast. Clearly, he has adopted our description of him. Kristaps, thank you for your support. We got you.
What if these shoes had like a unicorn coming out of like the tongue, like a unicorn horn coming in? Now that would be a badass shoe. That's a better take.
It actually got worse.
I'll get a better take by the end of the pod. I promise.
Didn't think it could happen. You got worse.
Shooting rainbows.
All right. Well, moving on. We'll move on to the
please do.
The,
please
the Grizzlies. Do. The Grizzlies. We're just gonna keep getting happier in this.
Pressing, Jimmy.
A lot of there's usually a honeymoon period when there's a coaching change in the NBA, but not in Memphis. They've lost three in a row since getting rid of David Fizdale. 11 in a row overall. Bill.
Scapegoats don't work because goats don't ball. What does that mean? That's a big programism. Fizdale is a great coach. Everybody knows it. He had a personal conflict with a player, not the entire team. They made a colossal mistake, and that Memphis organization is now bearing out the consequences of their incompetence.
This team was my tanking candidate, was a tanking candidate from the beginning of the season, and they became a tanking reality the moment that Mike Conley got injured. This team needs to trade Marc Gasol and go for Marvin Bagley because, look, this is nothing's happening in Memphis right now, and firing David Fizdale wasn't going to change that.
All right. Last one. Well, actually, no. Two more. Sorry. Donovan Mitchell had 41 points in the Jazz's win over the Pelicans. He's now third among rookies scoring in the NBA. He's closing in on Kyle Kuzma fast. About 22 points a game in the Jazz's five-game win streak, and they're seventh now in the West. And Gobert's still not back in the lineup. Reed, you like this kid coming in, right?
Yeah, I love this kid coming in. He's a two-way player. He's a hell of an athlete. He needs to get under control a little bit, but we saw what he can be in that 41-point game. Look, it's a testament to this rookie class that he's going to have this awesome of a rookie season, and I don't think he's probably going to end up finishing top three. To me, Simmons is the rookie of the year for sure, and then Kuzma and Tatum and Kuzma. Maybe Mitchell breaks into that top three. But the fact that he is having this sort of game this early in his career, since the year 2000, there have been – he's the first rookie since Steph in 2010 to hit 5-plus threes in consecutive games. Donovan Mitchell's awesome. The Jazz hit a home run here, and it's so nice for this franchise to hit this home run after losing Gordon Hayward in absolute heartbreaking fashion.
Look, I think the real takeaway here – is that if he only had a shoe with fire coming out of its ass and a unicorn tongue, he could keep it going per the Reed Forgrave coaching style. No, I'm with you. And by the way, there's a lot of people not listening to this podcast, but sort of casual fans in general who aren't even familiar with who this guy is. It reinforces for me why the NBA's future, I think, is absolute. And I think it's at the expense of the NFL, but we're the NBA is able to sell its product regardless of parity because people don't care about the teams in the regular season. They care about the individuals and the players. And there is so much talent in the league and so much talent that hasn't even gotten mainstream attention yet that this to me reminds me how bright the league's future actually is.
Unicorn shoes.
The unicorn shoes is the big take.
Unicorn shoes is the big take.
Also, quick bonus one on this topic. How good is Quinn Snyder? We haven't even talked about him that much.
By the way, I have some great Quinn Snyder stories.
Yeah.
Because he was at Mizzou when he got fired.
Ones that you can tell?
Probably not. I didn't mean those, man. I just mean going to his house when he got fired and like tracking him down the phone. He used to call me to like talk like – I remember I was at like a lunch in Kansas City after I wrote a story about him with like an editor and an assistant sports editor. You know who I'm talking about, Reed, Fannin and Holly. And it was just like, hello. And he just wanted to like him and Marty Schottenheimer were the two sources that would just call me just to like shoot the shit for like a year. Like, hello. That's not a really great story. It was just really weird.
For our next behind the scenes podcast, Bill gets to tell about golfing with Marty Schottenheimer.
Yeah. Reed sent me the greatest text message ever real quick. I golfed in South Carolina with Marty at some like ridiculous where the pros live and play country club. Not a great golfer, and Marty talked during my tried to coach me during my entire round. Former Chiefs coach, former Chargers coach, got fired after going 14-2, which is ridiculous. Anyway, and I literally Joey was like on track. I shot on the front nine. Look, I'm not great. I can shoot anywhere from like an 88 to 110 if I absolutely just like you know, count every stroke. Not great. But I can have a round or two. Not great. But I should never shoot higher than, say, 55 or, you know, really 50. I shot like 97 on the front nine because like Marty's like talking to my backswing and trying to get me to change my swing. And just like he's coaching me. Right. And I sent Reed like an update and Reed just wrote like on like 5 or 6 because it's humiliating. Swing harder. Dick. All right. Sorry. Please continue.
All right. Let's talk about the Kings. George Hill. I was thinking about this as I was reading. Like, we're gonna talk about George Hill. George Hill, he tweeted out about 800 angry emojis after the Kings lost Saturday night to the Bucks. He's playing his least amount of minutes since he split time with Darren Collison in Indy in 2011-2012. All of his numbers are down, other than his 3-point shooting. The Kings are 7-16. He chose to go there. Bill,
look, I'm looking at the emojis now. They're angry. They're aggressive. There's many of them. I feel your pain, but you have to look, man. You make your bed, you sleep in your bed. Sacramento wasn't some hidden secret. It's not like you went to the Spurs and things went badly. This is what it is. This is what you were in for. You're becoming part of the problem. No sympathy.
Unicorn. 26 angry emojis, dude. But then he looks at his paycheck, you know, next Friday, whenever they come out in the NBA. 3 years, $57 million. I think those emojis might change a little bit. Bummer. Bummer on the court, but dude got paid.
When Matt Lauer got fired, by the way, just apropos of nothing, I did the math. He reportedly made $25 million a year. Do you know what that is after taxes? I'll tell you. That's $500,000 a paycheck. That means LeBron James, for example, LeBron makes more than that, but like for those guys in the league to make $25 million, give or take taxes, more or less of the play, $500,000 every 2 weeks.
Yeah, so they're like me. They're like me.
No, I didn't say $5 every 2 weeks. I'm sorry. I said. did you mishear me?
Yeah, sorry. Yes. All right, last one.
That's a lot of money. We just. This has been a depressing podcast. I feel like we just depressed the little man out there. The average
little
working
man.
Show.
We are the little man. You're such an asshole. The little man. Depressed. What are you, the big man? Oh, I live in Minneapolis.
No, I think Matt Lauer's the big man. $500,000 every 2 weeks. We're all little men next to that.
Matt, the woman is beyond me. Like with these wooing skills. Hey, you're not as ugly as I heard you were. You want to go out sometime? What?
Check out my sweet unicorn shoes.
God, what are you doing?
Got a horn on the. Joey, what I just swore. We're quietly going to mark it down. All
right, I got one more for you guys. This one's a little better.
Bring it, Joey. Bring the noise.
The Mavs, they blew out the Clippers Saturday night. At halftime, Nerlens Noel was a little bit hungry. So he did what anybody does in the middle of an NBA game, and he went into the media center, got a hot dog. And when he was asked why, he said he needed energy for the second half. But he didn't play in the game. He was a DNP. And then the next day at practice, he and his head coach, Rick Carlisle, talked about it. Here it is.
I just want to say yesterday's incident with the hot dogs, I've just been going harder pregame, lifting-wise, and I got a little hungry. Different schedule, so, you know, it obviously meant nothing. You know, last thing I not want to do is eat, so, you know, I just want to take as many calories as I can. But, you know, I just got to be smart about that and send a ball for some.
It's no sin to get hungry.
Yeah, I didn't think so, but, you know, just got to be smarter about how you went about it.
So, look, I'm representing him. I'm going to go talk to Wild About Harry's over on Knox. It's a hot dog place, and we're going to see if they'll do a Nerlens. The Nerlens, which is a relish only, right?
Yeah, relish only.
Relish or nothing at all.
Yep. Yeah.
Did they have relish last night?
I didn't see it, so I just got a bad.
Just plain, right?
Yeah. All right.
Let's hear it.
All right, so can I just jump in?
Yep.
I love this, and I have no anger toward a man getting his hot dog and his food when he needs to. However, I'm going to go a little serious. There's this code. There's always this amazing food, like locker rooms for players across multiple sports, including sometimes the NBA, like fruit dishes, like orange juice, and many a hungry, poor, bedraggled, exhausted, you know, red eye suffering journalist has walked in and looked longingly at that food. Does that mean we are now entitled? We don't get a lot of food. Those hot dogs can be pretty limited. Like, he ate one. There have been times where I'm like looking at Windhurst, or I'm looking at not Woj, because Woj is a different level. Or I'm looking at Howard Beck. I'm like, don't you eat that hot dog? That last hot dog is mine. It can be a race to the dog. I'm just saying, does that now open up, at least with the Mavericks, the right to be like, I don't want no soft serve ice cream for lunch. I want what's going on in the players' room pregame. I want some of that fruit and yogurt. I want some of that sushi that's hiding over there.
If Bill Ryder were in the media room, he would have been like, "Yo, Nerlens, those are the media dogs, dude. Get out of here. Those are our hot dogs. I've been sitting there for 4 hours. I got two issues with Nerlens here. One is just relish on a hot dog. That is disgusting.
Oh, I no, I support that move.
I fully unsupport
relish
it.
Relish is the second most important. What do you put on your hot dog?
Ketchup and mustard.
If you say ketchup, you can't. You don't have ketchup. Don't ever speak about a hot dog again.
No.
Don't ever speak about a hot dog again.
Relish is disgusting unless it's a Chicago dog.
I've got Chicago roots, and my family come from a long line of meat producers. We make one of my earliest memories watching hogs get killed. You put hot dog and ketchup together, you are an idiot when it comes to hot dogs. That is
I've known you for 20 years, and I never knew that one of your earliest memories was watching hogs get killed. That's up, man.
Wow.
Take number two. Nerlens Noel should have got a beer while he was at it.
Wow. I mean, dude, like,
I do like ketchup on my hot dog. Ketchup,
yeah, you're
and
disgusting. And you can't catch it. It makes me super angry. Oh, wow. That's really weird. Hey, here is the hot dog etiquette guide at hotdog.org. Let me just go through one of the rules.
Hotdog.org? Hotdog's own website?
Don't.
The hell?
Ketchup on your hot dog after the age of 18. Mustard, relish, onions, cheese, and chili are acceptable.
18?
You're
why
a child. You're
relish
a child.
Wandering in from the wilderness.
Yeah, dude. Like, this is what happens when you got some.
I love catching
down hokey like
bro.
Reed being like, I'm a sophisticated.
Dude, relish is gross, man.
You know, I really think that, Reed, I'm gonna correct people on pronunciation of words and pretend to read Dostoevsky, even though I don't know what it says at airports. Look smart. You know what the fuck. Talk about. I'm so angry about this. You don't put a ketchup on a hot dog, bro.
I put a ketchup on a hot dog, dude.
Don't use ketchup on your
hot
dog.
I don't put just ketchup on my hot dog. We should have some sort of poll. I don't know how we'd commission this poll, but I bet more than 50% of Americans, and we all know that a majority means they must be correct, put ketchup on their hot dog. And wear unicorn shoes,
18.
Bro.
Why 18 is the thing that fascinates. Why? Like,
it's stupid.
Smoke cigarettes,
you
go to the military.
Child, when
you just
really
consulted hotdog.org. I love it. And your first memory is seeing a hog getting killed?
One of them is awesome.
Slaughtered? It's amazing.
Yeah, the plan Dubuque, Iowa.
Gained new respect for you.
I mean, not my first. My first, like, startling. My first memory was like a turtle just chilling in the back of our backyard in Oklahoma. Oh, and actually, my first memory was my birth of my brother, like, going in to meet him for the first time.
Nice. That's a good first memory. Yeah. Different than seeing a hog get slaughtered.
What? Joey, do you put ketchup on your hot dogs too?
I don't really eat hot dogs.
Yeah, Joey's gross though for reasons that he's really worried I'm going to get into on the podcast. But like, Joey's got
really want to hear.
Joey's got some issues.
Smelly coat issues.
I'm not saying anything.
Joey's upset.
I'm not saying anything.
Joey, fess up. What's your weird?
I don't know. Like, I'm not sure what.
Come with it, Ryder. Come with it.
Ketchup. We're gonna revisit this in the next podcast. Forget talking NBA. I cannot believe you put. How does it even come up? I cannot believe you put ketchup on your hot dog. That is a travesty.
And I think relish is just disgusting. Absolutely disgusting.
Cool. Why don't you just say hot dogs are disgusting and stop talking about hot dogs like you know what you're talking about? Because you obviously don't.
You bet. Solve hotdog.org, bro. And hotdog.org. That's
website. Ridiculous. All right, well, that's an end of another edition of the Flaming 2 podcast with Reed Forgrave and Bill Ryder. Thanks to producer Joey. Thanks for hanging out. To the two of you that are still listening, wake up. The podcast is over. But before you go, please subscribe on iTunes. Please rate and review favorably. Until next time, remember, Reed Forgrave, sophisticate, slathers his hot dogs in ketchup. Have you no shame, sir? Have you no shame?